Well, this is a great time of year to learn more about gardening. Hi, I'm Jill Najoa. Thanks for joining us on Garden Talk. Our guest today is Lisa Johnson. She is a UW Extension horticulture educator for Dane County. And we'll talk with her about the upcoming gardening classes that they'll offer and what it means to be a master gardener. So what gardening questions are on your mind? Are you a master gardener? What are some of the benefits of it? Well, give us a call at 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Hi, Lisa.
Hi there.
Hi, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me
on. Excellent. You bet. It's always a pleasure having you with us because you can answer almost anything. I swear. It seems like it.
Don't give me too much.
We're going to prove it today. Well, first off, why don't you just tell us about these Green Thumb gardening classes? What exactly are they?
Sure. So these are classes that can be taken either by the public or people planning to become master gardener volunteers. And at least for the foreseeable future, they will be offered online. We are hoping to have some face-to-face lab sessions outside in our Dane County Extension Teaching Garden as the year goes on. Pandemic conditions.
Whatever happens, right?
A lot to do with that. But at the moment, we're going to be offering them online starting in January on Monday nights from 6 to 8. Later on in the summer, some of them will be offered on different days or during daylight hours.
Now, how experienced should someone be in gardening to take these classes?
You don't have to have any experience at all. It'll be offered at a level that can benefit both people that are newer to gardening and people that have some gardening experience. For example, our winter vegetable gardening series will take you through how to start seeds. It also gives some details about specific species. So, you know, we do add some more advanced content, but we talk about vegetable garden planting, vegetable garden diseases, insects, a little bit about cover crops too, which is more of an advanced topic, weed management, and then seed saving and harvesting. So that kind of gives you a rounded idea of what the beginning vegetable gardening series will be about.
Wow, that is impressive. So I'm sure there's a lot of people that started a vegetable garden this year because they had more time at home
right. And
probably have tons of questions. So this would be perfect for them.
Yeah, we are very excited about the whole new bunch of gardeners that started this year. I know that a lot of the garden centers sold out of materials early. It's really been good for horticulture businesses, and I hope that we will have a lot of these new gardeners continue in the future.
That would be great. I know I talked to a garden shop, greenhouse in my area just recently, and I wanted to ask them to order something for me. And they're like, well, we've already put our orders in because we want to make sure that we get enough stuff in this year. So yeah, they're anticipating having a good year coming up.
Right.
So.
I mean, there are even like in tree nurseries, you know, you can't just grow a tree at the snap of a finger. It takes
right,
time.
Exactly.
And so there are shortages. It is important to think about.
So what are some of the other topics that you're going to be covering in your classes? And they start in January, you said, right?
Right, that's correct. So the winter vegetable gardening series goes the 11th of January through the 1st of March. I should mention these might be really great holiday presents.
That's a really good idea. Yes.
Mm-hmm. They're priced to be affordable, either as a package or as single classes, so you don't have to take the whole package. Starting in March, we'll be doing a lot of pruning classes, fruit tree pruning, shade and ornamental tree pruning. Some of these will hopefully have labs outdoors. We'll be doing a shrub pruning class March 23rd, talk about soils and soil testing. I have a class about Wisconsin spring wildflowers that's new that I haven't really done before. And I always love the spring ephemerals. You know, everybody likes to go out to the Arboretum and see these things. So, and then we'll talk also about plant propagation without seeds. So things like taking cuttings, propagating with bulbs, and so on. Then in late spring, in May, we move into more of the outdoor topics like insects in the garden and plant diseases in the garden. Talk a little bit about some of the berries, healthy house plants. And in midsummer, we talk about, we'll have some of our great specialists from UW. For the insects in the garden, we'll have PJ Leash. And for fundamentals of plant diseases, Brian Huddleston, our own Dr. Death from the plant disease diagnostic clinic. We'll have David Drake from Wildlife Ecology, who's a wonderful speaker talking about attracting and managing wildlife in the garden and much more.
Well, that sounds great. I mean, a lot of those people you're talking about are guests on some of our shows too, so we can attest to their expertise. Well, that's wonderful. I'm gonna have to check those out myself. Now, with them being online, being virtual, are you able then to get more people in a class, or is that limited?
We've got spaces for a goodly number of people, certainly a lot more than if we were able to only do this physically.
Sure.
We are going to, you know, cut it off at some point because we want to make sure that people are able to have the time to ask questions. I would sign up, you know, as soon as you can, but it's not anything really to worry about. It's wonderful to have the platform that we do so that we can accommodate so many more people.
So is this something that you're contemplating maybe offering continually virtual, just so more people can participate?
Exactly, yes. And we hope to offer blended classes too, so those who prefer to do face-to-face would be able to do that, and those who would prefer to have online so they can participate in their bunny slippers and their pajamas if they so desire, we will have that option available too. Again, it kind of depends this coming year on what the pandemic does, but I think we will have some face-to-face classes in the future, and certainly those lab sessions where we do hands-on pruning work or, for the perennials, I have a class on sun perennials and shade perennials, and we'll have a lab where we go out to the teaching garden and look at some of the plants that we've talked about in class.
Wonderful. Now let's just transition into the Master Gardener training program. So how does that mesh with the Green Thumb gardening classes?
Well, the Master Gardener program at the state level is undergoing some changes, and I'm not really the best person to talk about that, but in this county, we will be offering Green Thumb classes for those people who want to become Master Gardener volunteers. But in the future, those who want to become Master Gardener volunteers will need to take an onboarding session at the university at the state level in order to become certified. Classes are not connected with the certification process.
I see. So that is definitely a change, isn't it, from the way it used to be?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Okay. All right. Great. Well, we have got a caller, so we'll go there first. If you have a question, number is 800-642-1234. And let's go to John in Chippewa Falls. Hi, John.
Hi. I have a question about, I've naturalized some bulbs in my lawn, crocuses and daffodils and stuff. And
oh, cool.
They just don't really seem to do much anymore. They barely come up. And I have a daffodil bed, and same thing with them. They just, you know, it's been a few years and they're just not showing up. They do, but they don't bloom well.
Yeah. How many years, and is the sun shade balance the same as when you put them in?
It pretty much is, yes, and it's been about 10 years.
Okay. You might be experiencing some crowding issues, and, you know, frankly, bulbs don't last forever, so there are some that do naturalize better than others, and certainly the ones that you've picked, crocuses and some of the, particularly the smaller daffodils, can last quite a long time. I'm wondering, do you have anything that you do to your lawn in terms of like weed killers or fertilizers that you're applying?
I use nothing like that at all.
Okay.
My jonquils I've got in the woods, and they seem to come back. Seem to be a pretty, you know,
those are really long lived, so that was a really good choice on your part. Not real sure what would be causing the others unless it's crowding. You might want to try putting in a few more and see if that helps. The other thing is you don't have a lot of critters that carry off your bulbs. I assume you'd probably notice if there were a lot of holes in your yard or in your beds.
No, I got a lot of critters, but I think they're pretty innocent.
Okay.
They just look that way, John. They just look that way.
Yeah.
Okay. They may those not big be. Eyes. Yeah, we know.
Yeah. I guess one more question to ask is, what type of soil do you have, and are there any problems with drainage in your yard?
No drainage problems. I have pretty bad soil. It's mostly sand, and I'm up by the lake here in Chippewa Falls, and yeah, it's just.
Okay, so bulbs are very sensitive to being not having good drainage, so that was what I wanted to check on with that. I'm not really sure. I mean, it sounds like you're doing everything right. Maybe since there hasn't been any fertilizer added, maybe you want to try that and see if that does anything for you.
What kind of fertilizer would you suggest, Lisa?
I would do it in the spring when they're actually growing. I would use something like, average 10-10-10, a balanced, fertilizer, and see if that does anything for you.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks for the call, John. We're talking with UW Extension horticulture educator Lisa Johnson today on Garden Talk. Join in the conversation. We have open lines. Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can always send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Our on-air producer today is Jane Rotunda, and Tyler Ditter is our technical director. This is Garden Talk on the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Join us every Friday or listen again on Saturday mornings at 6. And you can also go online and listen at any time. Next week, Aaron Presley will be back to share some gift ideas for the gardener on your list. Right now, we're talking with Lisa Johnson. And Lisa, we've got another phone call. Let's go to Helen in Oshkosh. Hi, Helen.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I need help in deciding where to plant some milkweed seeds. Last summer, two milkweed plants volunteered between my neighbor's cedar hedge and my driveway. In July, there were 8 monarch caterpillars feeding on these milkweed plant leaves. Since then, a friend has given me some milkweed seeds, and I'm wondering what sort of spot I should choose to plant them in. Can they withstand wind? Do they want a lot of sun or not much sun?
So milkweed prefers as much sun as you can give it. That being said, it will tolerate some light shade. Now, I'm not sure what kind of milkweed seeds your friend gave you. I should caution you that the common milkweed is a runner. It puts down a very robust rhizome system and tends to spread all over the place. I myself prefer to use things like swamp milkweed, which is also native here, or butterfly weed, which is the orange flowering milkweed. Those tend to stay in clumps. However, if you've had success with the other and you don't mind a lot of spread, I just don't want you to be cursing me in, you know, a couple of years when you've got it everywhere. Then, you know, go ahead and use that. But you just need to be aware of it's very difficult to remove once you have it spreading all over the place.
So how should she go about actually planting that, Lisa? What's the best procedure?
Well, some of the milkweed seeds are likely to need a cold period over the winter. So if you can give that to them, they will germinate much better. You can do that by storing them, you know, in the refrigerator so that they get some cold temperatures. One thing that we have done before that my friend Frank Hassler from Good Oak Ecological taught me to get the silks off is you get a metal bucket and you throw a lighted match in there. Now, you do not want to use plastic or anything like that, and you obviously want to do this in a place with, you know, good ventilation. But and don't stick your face down in there when you drop in the match because it goes poof. But it very beautifully burns off the silks and leaves the seeds and actually kind of encourages them to grow.
Great. That's a wonderful idea because the silk is just there to help it float on the wind, right? It has nothing
exactly.
to do with growing.
Yeah, that's its spreading okay. mechanism, but it's kind of a pain to handle. It's just, you know, difficult to deal with. So, yeah, that's an easy way to get those silks off.
Definitely. Well, that's a great idea. I have been fallen prey to the milkweed that likes to spread.
Yes.
I swear there was one last year, and this year there was probably 25. So,
yeah
exactly. Be careful.
Yeah, that's why I don't usually recommend that species, but it is, you know, tempting when you actually have monarchs come and visit it.
Yes. Yeah, I didn't plant it. It chose the location by itself, but yeah. And I did get monarchs though. So that was a good thing. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
Thank you so much, Helen, for the call and good luck with your milkweed seeds. And if you have a question for Lisa, please give us a call. All of our lines are open right now, 800-642-1234. Or you can send an email and that address is ideas@wpr.org. And we do have an email from Lisa and she was wondering, are there good websites or books to consult if she wants to try growing new vegetables? She runs into trouble knowing when something is ready to be picked, and she would also like recipes to use the veggies that she is growing. Any ideas?
Yes. One of the first things that you can do is visit the Learning Store site that has, if you just Google Learning Store and UW, or it might even come up still with UWEX. There are a number of vegetable publications. A lot of them are written for new gardeners. There's everything from one on tomato varieties to a longer one called The Vegetable Garden that gives you ideas on how to plan your vegetable garden, what crops to grow. We've also got some that go into much more detail. There's a whole series that Karen Delahoe had written a number of years ago, such as the growing peas and beans in Wisconsin. There's one on growing vine crops in Wisconsin that gives you a lot of detail, and it is Wisconsin-centered. So it gives you a bunch of really great information about everything from planting to proper harvesting and even storage. Now, the recipes I'm not so great with. But there is one that I remember. There's the Moosewood. Was it Moosewood Cafe? I think if you Google Moosewood and recipes, that will come up. There's also one that was produced locally called, I think something like A to Z, or I'm looking it up here, A to Z vegetables or something to zucchini. I think I've got it here in the kitchen. I just have to find it.
Well, I'm sure people could Google that.
Yes.
But there are a lot of really good vegetarian cookbooks out there, too,
exactly.
that probably would
yeah.
be helpful for the veggies.
Yeah,
I have one from...
I am a vegetarian, so that's why I know about the Moosewood one.
Yes, I have one for Cooks Illustrated, too, because I too, am a vegetarian. So it's a really nice one. There's a lot of good ones out there. So have fun. Just go out and experiment. And just as an FYI, if you want to go directly to the Learning Store, it is learningstore.extension.wisc, so WISC.EDU. So you can get there directly from there. Otherwise, if you just Google the Learning Store, I'm sure it'll pop up for you. So, yeah. Okay, well, let's go. Thank you for that question, Lisa. And let's go back to the phones now. We've got Betty in Brown Deer. Hi, Betty.
Oh, Dandy. Hi. Maybe you can help me.
We will certainly try.
I think I'm not a master gardener anymore. I don't know quite what happened. I didn't get my paperwork in over a year ago. And then we lost our garden at Haven Woods. And I still visit it. Haven Woods has planted a nice pollinator garden there. But I'd like to come back, and I don't know how to do it.
I would contact, I think you probably, I believe Vijay Pandian is the educator in your county.
We lost our person that I was kind of talking to, and then I think she went to Seattle.
Which county are you in?
Milwaukee County.
Yeah, that would be Vijay. So if you just look up the Milwaukee County Extension website, Vijay would be the person to talk to. Either that, or you can contact, if you're not able to get a hold of him, I mean, he would be the best person, but you could also check on the Wisconsin Master Gardener website and see if you can get a hold of Amy or Mike.
Okay, great. Well, good luck, Betty. We hope you get back into the program there.
Yeah,
let's
Haven
go
Woods
next to Mary. And
great.
What was
great,
that?
Garden. I was saying Haven Woods is a really cool garden.
Where is that located?
Oh, gosh. Now it's been so long, I've forgotten which community it's in. But
okay.
I remember they used to have a greenhouse, and they had... beehives, and they had just a lot of really neat things there. My colleague, Dennis Lukaszewski, worked there for quite some time.
Okay, great. All right, well, thank you again, Betty. And let's go to Mary now in Belleville. Hi, Betty. Or, I'm sorry, Mary. Mary, are you there? Oh, I don't think we have Mary there. Mary, can you hear us? Well,
yes.
Let's... Mary?
Yes.
Okay, go. Great. We need to hear your question then. What can we help you with?
Last year, I planted about 15 feet of garden peas. They never came up. They're in a raised garden, very nice. So I finally, in desperation, dug up the row to see what had happened. There was not a single pea there. Did something eat them, or what could have happened?
Did you plant them real early, or when did you plant them?
At a reasonable time. I plant them every year. I've never had this happen.
Okay. I had the same problem with beans last year, and it turned out that there was an insect that was causing a problem that I hadn't known about. It was actually the beans would some of them would germinate and some of them would germinate, but or some of them wouldn't germinate. The ones that did germinate generally were blind. They didn't have any cotyledons. They didn't have any leaves. So I ended up having to replant later. The reason I asked about whether you were planting, what planting time you had, was if you're planting too early and the soil is cold and wet, often the peas will rot. So I know that that does happen. Did you, if you've been planting them in the same place every year, I would also recommend rotating to a different area, because there may be some kind of soil disease. There are, like, Phantomyces is a soil-borne pathogen, and, you know, you could have built something up in that area because you've planted the same thing in the same place. So you would want to plant something that's not in the pea or bean family in that place and not come back to it with peas or beans for about 3 years. So I would try that first.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for that question, Mary. Good luck with your peas next year. Next up is Mark in Eau Claire. Hi, Mark. What can we help you with?
I would try that.
Mark, are you there?
Thank you for that question, Mary. Good luck with your peas next year. Next up is Mark in Eau Claire.
Okay, well, I don't think Mark is listening to you on the phone. Let's go on to Christy in Vernon County. Hi, Christy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question.
Well, thanks for listening.
We have an area on our property that's just been taken over by daylilies, and they don't even bloom. So what I'd like to do next year is to eradicate just certain spots, certain areas of them. And I've had some, I'm new to this, but have been using the horticulture vinegar. And I was wondering if that would be a possibility, and to choose certain spots to use this agriculture vinegar. And then wait for the fall to arrive of 2021. And plant bulbs. Would that work?
Most likely not. The horticultural vinegar is not likely to affect the root systems. You can burn off the tops, but with something with a really aggressive perennial root system like daylilies, it's really hard to eradicate them even with a full-blown herbicide. Unfortunately, you probably will have to do some digging. It sounds like, I'm guessing, since you're using horticultural vinegar, that you're probably not wanting to use any of the conventional herbicides. Am I correct with that?
That's correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Even smothering doesn't usually help with something that has a really robust root system like daylilies. So I think probably your best bet is to do some digging.
That does not sound like fun, Christy, but good luck with that. Oh,
yeah.
Gosh.
I hate to say it, but that's probably going to be the most effective technique.
Sometimes that's what you have to do. Back to basics. Back to basics. Okay, and if you've got a question, please give us a call. We have a couple of open lines, 800-642-1234. And let's go next to Bob in Mellon. Hi, Bob.
Well, hello. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you.
All right, very good.
Go right ahead.
I thought they would pass it along. I've wondered about growing columbine in northern Wisconsin. Is it suitable, and what conditions should be provided?
So let me check what type of columbine you are talking about. Are you talking about the woodland one that is orange and red, or are you talking about a hybrid type of columbine?
Well, you're beyond me already. The kind that comes in a package that you get in the store, which I have some several of.
Okay. I would imagine if it's a seed, what I would do is check on the seed packet and see what the hardiness zone is. If most, you know, perennials are, well, all perennials are going to be hardy to a certain zone. As you get farther up in the state, here in the lower part of the state, we're zone 5. As you get up to the middle part of the state, we're more zone 4, and you can even have some zone 3s. So you need to make sure that the particular species that you're growing is hardy in all the different areas. Now, most of the hybrids are going to be zone 5, but if we're talking about the native, that does grow all the way through Wisconsin, as well as like the whole eastern half of the U.S. and even a little bit into to Canada. So if it's the native orange and yellow one, that should be fine. They do need to have partial shade and decent moisture.
Okay, thank you very much for the call, Bob. Well, go ahead.
If by partial shade, the area I'm thinking about basically faces west, and it is shaded by the house through the morning, is that adequate partial shade? Because it comes pretty full sun from the mid part of the day on.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of sun. If you had told me that it was east facing or you had morning sun, I'd be a lot more confident than afternoon sun, because that tends to be a lot hotter and it just tends to dry out the site more as well. Is this like up against a white house as well?
The house is kind of a tan, and it's separated from the house by a patio that's covered by a deck.
Okay. All right. Well, you could try it, since it's only a packet of, you know, seeds. It's not too big of an investment. I'm just not sure that, you know, particularly since the northern part of the state, we tend to have a lot more rocks in the soil, and so it tends to be a little bit drier, whether that'll work well or not. But you could certainly, you know, maybe plant half of them there and see how they do for you.
And Lisa, I'm sure there's some other maybe more native plants that might actually do a little better in those in that situation. Does anything come to mind that's similar to a columbine that might do better with more light, more sun?
I can't think of anything that's particularly, well, maybe one of the penstemons, but there are certainly a lot of other wonderful native plants that would do well in that kind of situation. Anything from asters to milkweeds, like we were talking about earlier, to a number of the prairie plants or meadow species as well. Now, columbine only blooms in the spring, too, is something to think about.
True.
So if you want to have things blooming all season of the year, you do need to plan for making sure that you have things that bloom at different times.
There you go. Do a little research, Bob. Like Lisa said, get some education on what you're looking for. That should help. Lisa Johnson is our guest on Garden Talk today. Join in with your questions at 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Najoe. Join us again on Monday starting at 11. Our tech expert is back to help you with your tech issues. That's Monday on the Ideas Network. Lisa, we had a Lou and Ashlyn call, but he couldn't stay on the line. He said, regarding the caller asking about growing columbine, she says grow the columbine on the east side of the house and hostas on the west side. Isn't that a little hot for hostas?
Well, you know, it depends up north, how far north you are. I would still think that you can burn hostas in the sun. There are some, though, that can take about, you know, at least half a day of sun, but west sun can tend to really burn hostas.
Mm-hmm. Well, they must be working for Lou, but yeah, so be careful if you want to follow her. So, okay, well, let's go back to the phones then. And next up is Chris and Adams. Hi, Chris.
Good morning. I have some advice for the lady who wanted to get rid of her daylilies. You know, everybody that's got a perennial garden runs out of space because everything spreads. And you end up donating things to neighbors, and that's a lovely thing to do. And I have planted almost my entire front yard in donations from neighbors that came over and just dropped something off and said, here, here's a hosta, here's a daylily, here's an iris, go plant it. And she could put them out on her front steps or something with a sign that says, free daylilies, give me cookies or something. I mean, you get to meet your... You get to meet your gardening neighbors, and it's a lovely thing. It's like, don't try and kill them. You can't kill daylilies anyway. So no matter what you can try to do to daylilies, you can't kill them. So you may as well just donate them to somebody, right?
All right, great. Thanks, Chris. Lisa, you have a comment on that?
Yeah, I would be really cautious about that. Some of the daylilies are really invasive. And it sounds like the caller who originally called may have that type. And the other thing that I'm really cautious about these days is jumping worms. And, you know, you might have them and not even realize that you have them. And by donating to, you know, your friends and neighbors, you might be spreading them around. That has been a real problem in terms of a lot of the plant sales, because it's a great way to move those critters around. They're in a lot of counties already, and they can be really damaging to the soil. I know because I have them, and I know a lot of gardeners that suspect that they got them through donated plants. So. It's really sad because I agree that's, you know, I've certainly gotten a lot of lovely plants, too, in the past from gardening friends. But I just really caution people to be very, very careful about it. Now, if you wash off all the soil, you certainly have a better chance of not having that happen. But caution is advised.
Definitely. I was just going to ask you about that. When it comes to washing off the soil, what's the best way? I mean, should you just use warm water? What method do you use?
I would be careful about warm water, too, if you've got softened water at all, because lots of times it only comes through the hot water pipes. You know, you could just use regular hose water. And put the plant in a bucket and kind of swish it around to get most of the soil off, and then gently use your hose to get the rest of it off. And frankly, it works better for some plants that have, you know, fairly thick roots like hostas, and some other plants that have very fine roots. Sometimes they get too damaged in the process. So again, you need to kind of figure out what method would be best, and maybe it's best to just say no.
Well, that's true. That's true. Okay, thanks for the comment, Chris. We appreciate that. Let's go to Duke now in North Prairie. Hi, Duke.
Good morning. We have a couple of acres we've been recapturing from farmland on our property, and you know, planting milkweed and or supporting milkweed, but we also are planting trees. And my question is, do you think that sweet chestnut trees and or pear trees could do well? I'm in North Prairie, west of Waukesha.
Okay. The chestnut trees do tend to be prone to some issues. They don't always live very long. Do you know exactly what kind? I'm not sure when you say sweet chestnut, what exactly you're referring to.
Well, frankly, we just found them in the Burpee catalog from Bloomington, Illinois.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
They say
sure
zone
those...
4, and we're supposedly zone 4. The zone 4 is okay, but, you know.
Yeah, what I'm concerned about is chestnut blight, whether that would be an issue with that particular species. Pears should be fine in your area. There are some, I mean, they're better in zone 5, but there are some that I think would do okay in zone 4. You just have to realize that there may be some winters where if you get like an early spring frost that you may lose your flower buds. And so you may not get all that many pears. Also, with pears, you do need to have two varieties if you want them to pollinate each other and be able to bear.
Right. Very important. So thank you, Duke. I hope you find the right fit for your yard. If you've got a question, give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. How was your garden this year? Do you have any questions about something that maybe didn't work, or was there something that really did work and you want to share it? We'd love to hear from you. Kathleen in Greendale emailed. She did a straw bale garden for the first time this year, and she said it was wonderful. And she kept her bales for next gardening season as they were brand new this year. And does she need to keep condition? Does she need to condition them again in the spring?
Okay, so let me make sure that I got this right. So she had straw bales that were conditioned this past year, and she grew things in them, and afterwards they're still in good shape. Is that what I'm
That's
hearing?
Kind of what I am getting, and she kept them, so she still has them, and she wants to use them next year because they were brand new this year.
I guess the thing that I might be a little concerned about is the possibility of any, you know, disease organisms that mm-hmm. might have built up there. The thing with straw bales is that because it's not soil, sometimes you can end up with some issues.
right.
Especially if it's been, you know, super, super wet. Usually I don't have any problem with recommending, you know, if the bale has started to decay, sort of scattering it around and using it for mulch that second year. But usually they don't survive that well over the winter, so I'm just not sure that that's going to work.
Yeah. And, you know, we've had Joel on a number of times who basically invented the straw bale gardening mm-hmm. thing. And he has a few things on his webpage or their Facebook group. What they do with the straw bales from last year is they use them again this year, but they use them in a different way. So maybe
right.
like to grow potatoes, but to get a fresh bale for the regular straw bale garden. I think that's what he recommends. So I checked that out.
Yeah, you might have to retie them is my guess mm-hmm. because a lot of
yeah.
the twine tends to disappear as well. Potatoes might work in that. But yeah, I usually prefer to get new bales every year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what he said. But I I think you should check out some, you know, check out the websites, check out the people who've been doing it. They're the experts, right?
Right.
Let's go to Keith and Wanake actually had an email too. He said, once you obtain a Master's Gardener certificate, what does it mean and what is it good for?
Okay, so with the Master Gardener program, certification means that you have passed an exam, and it also means that you are certified to volunteer with the university as a representative of Extension with the university. It is an achievement, absolutely. And it does entitle you in this this state to receive some benefits like newsletters. You can attend various conferences. There are different levels of things. But in order to be certified, there is a background check that you need to go through, and some other types of volunteer types of training so that you know what is required. And then there is the passing the exam so that we know that your horticulture knowledge is such that we feel confident that, and you feel confident that you can do things like answer questions at farmers markets or at county offices and assist in things like helping out at school gardens and so on.
Okay, so lots of volunteer opportunities.
Yes, it's the Master Gardener Volunteer Program, and the volunteer part is the really important part. It's not a garden club. It's a volunteer-based organization where you get education and then you volunteer back to your community. It's a great way to meet other like-minded people and to give back.
Exactly. Okay. And let's go back to the phones now. Cindy in Lake Mills might have an answer for Kathleen's straw bale question. Hi, Cindy.
Yes. I've been straw baling for 3 years now. And actually, the second bales, or for the second year, I plant my potatoes, carrots, and my zucchini in the old bales, and they grew fantastic. So
nice.
It's great to have things that grow in the ground to put in your secondary bales that you planted your first year, and then use them the second year for your things that grow in the ground. And but my zucchini plant obviously did tremendous. I couldn't give it away. I had so much I was giving out. It went well. But yes, and you still need to condition it a little bit when you're doing your other conditioning on your new bales. But that worked out fabulous for
That's
things
good.
That grow in bales. So just now, wanted to let them know that.
Did you have to retie it or do anything like that?
I tightened them up, yes,
yeah.
But I have a wire around them already.
Ah, okay.
So
gotcha.
That's what it, you know, I have this beginner's straw bale book, and that's what it suggests to do in the beginning anyhow to keep them firm in case
right.
your strings break. But, yeah, it was great to do my potatoes in and carrots and stuff like that. So it's fabulous. So
that's great.
Wonderful.
That's
Thank you.
For you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Cindy. Really appreciate it. It's great because we're all learning something here. Great
sure.
listeners. Let's next go to Lynn in Beloit. Hi, Lynn.
Yeah, good
morning. Lynn, are you there? Okay, go ahead.
I'm here. Okay. My garden hasn't been planted as a garden in a couple years, so it's full of weeds. I'm just wondering what to do for next year to get it ready. If there's anything I need to do this fall.
Okay, is this a vegetable garden?
Yes.
Okay. So depending on what type of weeds you have and if the weeds did go to seed, if you till up the garden, you're likely to get a lot of weeds germinating. Also, if you have some really nasty perennial weeds such as thistles or quackgrass or something like that, when you till, that tends to actually cut those roots, and then you end up, you know, kind of redistributing it. All that being said, if it's got a lot of weeds in it, you probably can't just, you know, leave it that way. So if they're mostly annual weeds, you might be able to put some black plastic down and be able to smother and or solarize those weed seeds. Usually what I recommend for places like that that haven't been used for a couple of years and are very weedy is actually tilling it once, letting the weeds grow up. Depending on whether or not you're willing to use herbicides, you could either spray at that time and then till again, have some more weeds come up and solarize, or you could solarize both times.
Okay, well, lots of stuff to think about. We've been talking with Lisa Johnson, a UW Extension horticulture educator for Dane County. I'm Jill Najow, in for Larry Mueller on Garden Talk. Stay with us. There's always more to come. It's Friday, so it must be Garden Talk. I'm Jill Najow. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Lisa Johnson is back with us today. She's a Dane County UW Extension horticulture educator. What gardening questions or comments do you have? We'd like to hear from you today. What are you planning for next year? Do you have questions about what to plant? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And let's go to Rosie in Ashland. She's got a joke for us. Hi, Rosie.
Yes, do you know why people in Wisconsin lock their cars in the fall?
I have a feeling I do know, but I won't give it away. Why?
So nobody can give them a zucchini.
Yes, I knew it. Thank you, Rosie. Appreciate that. So, Lisa, how was the zucchini crop this year? Was it good?
You know, the vine crops tend to be susceptible to a lot of things. We get squash vine borer and some of the types of vine crops. We get squash bug. We get powdery mildew. We get downy mildew. So in some parts of the state, it was great. In other parts, not so great. But that's kind of how it is, you know, every year. When we tend to have a lot of rain, we tend to have more of the fungal pathogen issues. So some areas that had a lot of rain had some more problems with that.
Okay. We had a listener email. They've had problems getting sweet peas to bloom. The plants look great, but no blooms in the past 3 years. They've waited to fertilize until it looks like the plants aren't blooming, so they don't think they've been over-fertilizing. They didn't have any luck planting in the ground, so the past 2 years they've grown the peas in pots. Do you have any idea what's going on?
Wow. I'm wondering if there's something with the seed source, whether maybe they're using older seeds or, I mean, because you're growing in two different kinds of soil, so that shouldn't be the issue. You could have problems, like they were talking about fertilizer. You know, if you fertilize with nitrogen fertilizer, that often will encourage more leaf growth than flower growth. I'm just wondering if it isn't something with the seeds themselves that's a problem.
Sure, that would make sense. We've had periodically people calling us with on Garden Talk with these same problems with peas and beans in particular, that they plant them, nothing happens, or they don't bloom. So,
yeah. Now, this was sweet peas. The flowering garden
sweet peas.
Plant. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now they are a biennial. So, but if they didn't, you know, flower either the first year or the second year, you would think, you know,
yeah.
Well, some I should
Maybe
say some of the species,
seed.
Some of them are biennial,
yeah.
And others are
sure.
just annual.
Okay. All right. Well, try a different package of seeds, I guess. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go back to Julie or the phones. We've got Julie in Stevens Point. Hi, Julie.
Hi. I've been trying to grow winter berry bushes because I'd like to have them there for the birds in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
I know you need a male and a female.
Right.
I'm trying to find a place that can give me a bush that I can plant instead of a stick that may or may not make it.
Yeah. I know they're, what part of the state are you living in?
Stevens Point.
You're in Stevens Point. Hmm.
Yeah.
Are you getting these mail order or are you trying to get them locally?
Yeah, we got a mail order this year. And
yeah, those tend to be sticks. Boy, I would have recommended Song Sparrow Nursery, but unfortunately they are no longer in business. But they, you know, they had like 1 gallon pots. You might have to go out of the area to get that. I know that a lot of places produce them as bald and burlapped, you know, good sized plants, but you might have to do a little bit of research to find out if there are some areas or some businesses nearby you to do that. But
so
yeah,
she should probably just jump on the phone and make some calls.
Yeah, that's what I would do. And see, because even if they don't carry it, they may be able to recommend a nearby nursery that does carry those. You know, a number of landscaping companies and nurseries do carry those plants. And there are some really nice new varieties as well that have been bred to have heavier bearing of berries and larger berries as well. And there are some that have gold berries now as well as the traditional red. So kind of cool.
Nice. Yeah, for sure. Okay. Well, thanks for the call, Julie. Next, we've got Mary in Toma. Hi, Mary. What's your question?
Hi. I'm one of those gardeners that are so sad that every year I get blight on my tomatoes.
Oh.
And I was wondering, you know, all I have is a plant with hardly any leaves and the tomatoes hanging on it, you know, by the time August rolls around.
Sure.
So I guess my first question is, do you have a favorite blight-resistant tomato that actually tastes like a tomato?
Have you tried Iron Lady by chance or Defiant?
I believe I tried Defiant, but in a panic because of Corona, I planted so many things from seed, you know, and I marked them, and by the time I got back to them, the sun had bleached them all out.
Oh, isn't that annoying? Oh, I hate it when that happens.
I know. You take all that time, but I appreciate that. Now, is Iron Lady like a medium-sized tomato?
Medium to small-er.
Okay.
It's not a real large size. Also, I do need to ask, are you growing them in the same place every year? Because most of...
I usually rotate them around in my lasagna garden. But last year was like a panic garden, and I grew too many from seed and ended up overcrowding.
Yep.
And I think that contributed heavily to the blight.
Yeah.
But I had blight the year before, too, and that was not an issue of overcrowding. I am creating another lasagna garden in another spot so I can rotate tomatoes from that one over to the back garden, and hopefully that's going to help. And then out of desperation, I'm growing some in 5-gallon buckets, and when it rains like crazy, I can pull them under the overhang so they don't get, you know, drowned.
Right. Now, in your lasagna garden, are you using any kind of mulch to provide a barrier between the soil and the plant?
Well, in addition to the 6 inches of ground up leaves and grass clippings. I really don't add anything more than that. Do you think I should be adding more on top of that?
And no, that garden's it sounds in play. Like if you've got that kind of organic matter on top of the soil, basically what you're describing to me sounds like one of the soil-borne diseases, either early blight or septoria leaf spot. Both of those often will defoliate the plant. And because they're soil-borne, if you make that physical barrier between the soil and the plant by adding organic matter, that often will help with the load. Also, I could recommend making sure that when you water at the base, removing the bottom leaves because it usually goes from the bottom up. Can help, and also making sure that you keep the canopy kind of pruned out so that the leaves stay drier and you don't have so much humidity on the inside of the plant canopy. All of those things can really help. But yes, disease resistance, and even you might want to look into grafted tomato plants. They're a lot more expensive. But in your situation, it might be helpful to get at least a couple of those. But Iron Lady and Defiant are a couple that are good. We also have a list of tomatoes in our Growing Tomatoes. Oh, I forget what the name of the publication is. It's something like Growing Tomatoes in Wisconsin or Tomatoes for Wisconsin at the Learning Store site. Sorry, my cat's making noise here.
Well, apparently he had something to add to the conversation. So.
She,
all right, great. Thank you, Mary.
A lot to say.
Thank you so much, Mary. Appreciate that. Let's go to Anne in Madison. Hi, Anne.
Hi. I have a question about irises. I did not dig mine out. Will they make it? If the snow cover keeps them fairly protected this winter, will they make it till spring?
Are these bearded iris?
They're great big white flowers. Maybe. I know I got them from somebody, but they're beautiful. And I just got lazy and I did not dig them out.
Well, iris are perennial, so they don't need to be removed unless they're Dutch iris that bloom real early in the spring. Those are a little bit less hardy, but most of the, you know, the fancy German bearded iris, almost all the iris species I can think of, Japanese iris, Siberian, those are all perennials, so you don't need to worry. They should stay in the ground, and you did absolutely the right thing. My guess is if they're big and white, they might be a variety called Immortality, and Immortality is actually a rebloomer. Somebody called me, I think, in November and said that their Immortality was reblooming. So, yeah,
wow.
I was... The only reason you would give it or you would dig it up is to check for iris borers or to divide them. But if they're recently planted, no need to do that. So you're good.
Okay. I have another question about that tomato blight. Do you know about the fact that sometimes they say cover the ground with plastic around your tomatoes, that the tomatoes like that? And could it be... a barrier then if you cover the soil so nothing can creep up there onto the plant with plastic?
Yes, plastic does work. Of course, it's not, you know, organic, so those organic gardeners are not going to want to use something like that. But there's actually been research with red plastic that indicates that red plastic can increase the yield somewhat. Now, of course, you do need to leave some space, like 6 inches around the base of the plant so that you can get water in there. And if we have a really hot, dry summer, sometimes people will remove the plastic later on in the season because it will keep the roots too warm. But in the early part of the year, plastic can help to warm up the soil. So that's what it's usually used for, that and keeping weeds down, and also for the disease control. But it is not organic.
Okay, thanks for that question, Anne. And lots less work for Anne. She doesn't have to dig up her irises, which I've never heard of before. So I'm glad she called in about that. Let's go to Norman in Wausau. He's up next. Hi, Norman.
Good afternoon. I got a comment and then a question. The comment is, 2 years ago, my wife planted about a 6-foot-long row of peas, and 6 inches away on the other side of the fence, I planted a row 6 feet long. Same peas, did everything the same. All of hers came up, and I think I had 3 in 6 feet. And we never did figure that one out. Now, the question I have is, I like to grow cantaloupes, the ones that have the netting on them pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is I can grow nice big cantaloupes, and they get big, and they stay that way week after week after week until finally at the end of the season they start to rot. They never seem to turn yellow and sweet. What am we doing wrong?
Well, I should say that cantaloupes are hard to grow here. We don't always have the length of season. Sometimes the temperature is not right. If we tend to get a lot of rainfall, that can affect the sweetness as well. So you may not be doing anything wrong. Have you tried different varieties? Because the ones that ripen in a shorter amount of time, that take less days to ripen, are ones that are usually more successful.
Well, the problem is I have a lot of problems with something going wrong in terms of fungi. I think it's fungi on the leaves. In other words, by the time the season's halfway over, it seems like a lot of the leaves are getting adversely affected by something. Even though I've tried the potassium bicarbonate, I've tried Captan on them and that sort of thing, it doesn't seem to help very much.
Yeah, it's probably either powdery mildew. Now, powdery mildew, a lot of the vine crops can tolerate that pretty well. Unless the leaf starts to turn brown. But downy mildew, which is on the underside of the leaf, can be lethal to the plant. So my guess is if you have it and it's hanging around for a while, it's probably powdery mildew and may not be causing a huge problem, but you might want to look for a disease-resistant cantaloupe as well as one that is going to ripen a little bit quicker, and also making sure that you're rotating where you're planting those. I think cantaloupes are just really hard to grow in our area. It's hard to get a decent harvest out of them.
Okay, well, thank you so much for that call, Norman. We did get an email from Russ in Stoughton, and he's wondering, is there any kind of hay that's okay for straw bale gardening, and can you talk briefly about the seasoning process?
Okay, so hay is not what you want to use. You want to use straw. You want to make sure that the bale is cut so that the cut end of the straw is facing up, because when you water, you want the water to sink in kind of through those hollow stems. You don't want to have it facing the wrong direction. The seasoning process does take a while. You need to be willing to use some fairly high nitrogen, commercially produced fertilizers. I know of people that have tried like blood meal and other organic sources, and usually it's not hot enough, so to speak. It's not concentrated enough, and also blood meal tends to attract flies and so on, so please don't do that. It can be really, really nasty.
You don't want that. It smells.
not a good choice for your nitrogen source. You want to use a high nitrogen fertilizer, and it can take a few weeks, especially if it's colder outside, to actually get that burn down into the bale. I would also really suggest taking a look at the Straw Bale Gardening book, because they have a whole lot of really good tips in that.
Right, for sure. And I believe that Joel just had a new edition of that out last year, I believe. So there's a lot of new things that, you know, they're discovering. So yeah, that's a very good suggestion, Lisa. Take a look at that book. Go to the library if you don't want to buy it. I'm sure they have it there, too. So.
And probably they have some used copies on Amazon that might be cheaper.
I'm sure they do. Yeah, but try to get the latest one. And like I said earlier, try a Facebook group too. It's a really good spot for people going back and forth with what they know. And then we've got a question from Keith or Kenneth in Janesville. He was wondering, with the late summer strange weather, when it got cold and then it warmed up again in the fall, the plants like the lilacs bloomed. What does this mean for next year? Is that going to cause a problem?
Well, it may. Now this is, I have been hearing in the past several years about problems with lilacs starting to bud out when we get a cold snap and then it it gets warm again. So you can have some tip dieback on those, or you can have effects on the flower buds. Because, you know, usually you, flower buds are often less hardy than leaf buds.
Right.
So, yeah, I have been hearing some problems with that. Also, sometimes when you get that dieback because of winter damage, you can have other things like bacterial issues get going in there as well. So I would... you know, there's really not a whole lot that you can do about it, but in the spring, if you do see dieback, I would cut those dead ends off.
Okay. Because I know that we've had lots of calls with that the last few months. For sure. Okay. Well, it looks like we're running out of time, but really quickly, Lisa, tell us again about those Green Thumb gardening classes.
Okay, so the Green Thumb Gardening classes are going to be online. They start in January. They're on Monday nights from 6 to 8, and you can buy them as individual classes or as a package, and they will continue into the spring and summer, all kinds of different topics. And the public is welcome, as well as people who are intending to become Master Gardener volunteers.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being with us again, Lisa. Happy holidays to you.
Thanks for having me. It's lots of fun.
All right, great. Our guest today on Garden Talk has been Lisa Johnson, a UW Extension horticulture educator for Dane County. You can find a link to the online gardening classes we talked about by going to WPR.org/Larry and look for this program note. I hope you can join us on Monday when our tech expert will be with us. And make sure you check out the Larry Mueller Show blog. We have lots of new entries. And the latest is about the 3 Stargazer events that you can see in the December sky. So take a look at that. Take a look at the sky. Very, very cool. I'm Jonah Joe. Thanks so much for listening to the Ideas Network. Stay well and enjoy your weekend.